To You Have to Wear Something. I'm still your host, Nicole Briggs. Today is a special Sunday because we have another wonderful guest. Chris Pirate is here with us. He is an artist, he is a designer, and he is based out of DC, and we're happy to have him. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So just to get into your background right away, there is so much that you do. I'm not sure what is the most important part of being an artist, being Chris Pirate, but I know you just had a contract with the Washington Wizards, and that's amazing. I'd like to go back and kind of start with like the origin story of Chris. How he got started. I did a little research on you. I know you were inspired by cartoons and animation, and that led to you illustrating. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I've always been an artist, right? To my understanding, that's just a type of person, right? That's how I was taught when I was growing up. I was probably recognized as an artist at the age of 4 years old. So it's like one of the first things I knew about myself. You know what I mean? So I was constantly told this. Oh, you're an artist. You know what I mean? It just, my family just not noticed what I did. So they just, oh, that's what you are. You're an artist. You know what I mean? So that was the first thing I really knew about myself. You know what I mean? Probably even before I even knew what race was or anything like that, I knew I was an artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's always just been an understanding. Yeah, yeah. So my mom's somewhat of an artist as well. She hasn't been able to, like, you know, live it out like me, you know, coming from a different generation. But she knew what being an artist was, you know what I mean? So she recognized it in me as an early age. And my sisters, you know, that's like, my sister's like my second mom, helped raise me. So these are people just always, you know, they were comfortable in that about me. So I was just always an artist my whole life. That's the best way I could put it. And I think all people are that have a conflict about being an artist or something like that. I think what they don't understand is just, it's just the type of person. So if you think you're an artist, you probably are, right? So I never saw it as a career because I just saw it as a type of person, you know? So I thought I had to be something else. Like, I'm always an artist, but I gotta become something else if I wanna make money. You know what I mean? I have to achieve something, right? So where a lot of people see art as an achievement, I was never taught that. It was just, you know? So I've always been an artist. The first thing out of high school I was able to make money on through art was design. I was working at a streetwear shop in DC in Georgetown, and they found out I was going to art school at the same time. I would draw at work, right, when it was slow. And my manager found my drawings one day. So one day I come to work and my drawings are on the wall behind me, behind the register. And I was like, oh, this is kind of embarrassing. You know what I mean? Like, this is the stuff I do for nobody to see. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah, you're not supposed to be doing that.
Exactly. And more so just like, this isn't nothing I'm super proud of. I'm just sketching. You know what I mean? Yeah. But to the average person, that's art. You know, they don't know it's not something I'm happy with. They found all these pictures. So that taught me that even though me as an artist, I'm mad picky, but the average person, you know, just enjoys seeing something that they can't do. You know what I mean? So my manager, you know, she's from the same side of DC as me, from Southeast. I don't know how much you know about DC, but DC is a very prideful city. It's a very, like, you got to be proud of who you are. People will test you. It's a very political city. It'll try you in a lot of ways. So you got to be firm on yourself, you know? So
yes.
My manager, I'm like, yo, like, I don't want that stuff on the wall. She's like, why? You do it. You're an artist. Be proud of your work. So I had to be okay with it. And thankfully, she did that because the home office to the brand, which was, it was a nationwide brand that launched from DC called Up Against the Wall, one of the first places to really carry streetwear like that. Billionaire Boys Club, stuff like that. And
Okay.
they would have to walk past my, because the office were upstairs, they would have to walk past my art to go into the offices. So they got to know that I was an artist. So one day I'm like, yo, let me design some shirts. And they told me, go ahead, do it. And long story short, it became my main job there. Instead of manager, I was making more money as a designer than an assistant manager. And yeah, one thing led to another. They closed down. I got paid as a designer and as an as a worker, kind of like a pension type of thing. And I moved to New York to kind of, like, I fell into that. So I moved to New York just like, yo, like, I gotta keep this going. You know what I mean? Moved to Brooklyn. And so from there, I accidentally painted a mural for a friend's shop, and just one thing just led to another, you know what I mean? But first, I just always been an artist, you know what I mean? Always.
Tell me about, first illustrating and how that connects to design and then doing a mural, because those are all different skill sets. Like, where are you learning to do that? Like, did you eventually go to design school, or are you just self-taught? And like, because designing and sketching and doing a mural, they're like very different things. So tell me about that jump.
No, absolutely. So I was, like I said, I was just an artist. I was in school for illustration and animation at the time. And I was in school right across from Georgetown, in an area of Virginia that's right outside of DC, right across the water. And so I would skate back and forth to this job. And just being skating and being in art school and then coming to this retail world, which I had no particular reason to be in that job. I think I got the job because I did a friend's project for him and he owed me a favor, so he got me a job, right? So he happened to be managing that store, and he's not an artist, so he went to school, so my same college, but for fashion. So he needed someone to help him with the art side of it, so I did it. And I always been fashionable, just probably because I'm an artist. You know what I mean? To me, I look at clothes almost like paint. You know what I mean? I don't shop for outfits. I never have. I've always shopped for pieces. Like, if I see a certain category of shoe style or shirt style or pants style that I'm into at the moment, I just rack up on it. And it's not even to wear it at the moment. It's because I need that color paint in my arsenal. You know what I mean? So one day, when I'm feeling this type of way, I can paint that picture with whatever in my closet because, yo, okay, I'm in this mood. I'm seeing that this type of pant with this type of cuff kind of like expresses that mood to me. So I need a bunch of them. You know what I mean? So I'll buy them for like maybe like 6 months, a certain style. And I'll probably won't even wear it. But it's up to me. It's about dressing how you feel, you know? And I think that comes from being an artist, right? You kind of want to outwardly reflect how you feel because it kind of does a lot of the work for you, right? As an artist, like you don't, you know what I mean? You don't have to communicate too much outside of the work. You want to communicate as least possible. So you want the work to speak for itself. You want, the more you can say without saying, the better for an artist. We're not always the best communicators and things like that. So part of it is how you look. You know what I mean? I've always been told, like, oh, I've had people who don't know I'm an artist, but they can tell by how I look. So that's always helped. You know what I mean? So, I never did it on purpose. It was a natural thing. So I just realized, yo, I should feed that. I should, And so when I worked at this streetwear shop, this was around the time that skatewear was becoming a normal thing for the average person who didn't skate to appreciate. So what happens is the brand, this is one of the pioneering stores for like streetwear. They also were the first store to have a Hot Topic type of store in
Got
like the
it.
70s or something like this, right? So it's a historic store. And so it's like a historic punk store. But they became a more streetwear shop once, like LRG and all these brands. They were the first place to carry LRG, right? So like even now when I'm more in the fashion game, people know when I say I work there, they know the owner, right? He was in the game. I had no clue about none of this at the time. I'm just a skate kid or going to art school. I needed a job, right? So thankfully, things lining up, skating was becoming, I guess, forecasted as a new style trend. So they started asking my opinion about a lot of things. They would source me on like, yo, do you like this? Do you like that? What's big in skate? What's this? So they started using me as a model on the internal blog in the company. And I guess through that, I started seeing like, oh, I have a voice in this. So I'm like, if you guys like this stuff that I wear, I can make it too. I'm in art school. So I started making it, you know what I mean? And like I said, they allowed me to do it. I had to take a risk. They told me they wouldn't pay me for it, but they would pay me consignment. Right? So imagine this. It's the store is called Up Against the Wall. The store is called Commander Salamander. Okay? This is a historic store you can Google where Bad Brains met, formed a band and all this stuff, right? And they met at this store. So but the wider brand is called Up Against the Wall. That's the chain of streetwear shops that's across the country. So the Up Against the Wall brand and the Commander Salamander brand that was designed was really my brand. I did it in my in the hood in the basement of my grandfather's old house, and people would come shop this as Up Against the Wall's brand. Up Against the Wall didn't pay me for this. It was like almost like if you have a brand consignment in the shop, it just had their logo on it. You know what I mean? So the in-store brand ended up selling more than that, the brands inside. You know what I mean? And I got all my friends to just sell it. I'm like, yo, just sell my brand. You know what I mean? If you sell my brand, you can go on a 2-hour break. You know what I mean? If you sell my brand, you can chill at work. Just sell my brand because I get paid for it. So it ended up blowing up, right? And people just like, oh, Up Against the Wall brand is back. It was really my brand. So I was in color theory at the time. I was in illustration class. So I was just, everything I was learning, I was just doing it and getting to sell
Yeah,
it.
you
You know what I mean?
refined
And
it. Yeah. And one thing I want to touch on
I,
is, oh, go ahead. I'm so sorry.
okay. No, I was gonna say, I went to school with a lot of fashion people, like I said.
Okay.
So would they end up coming to my store and asking me like, how are you doing this? Because this is what they were trying to do. I was
Yeah.
doing it on accident. You know what I mean? So I never saw the difference of art and fashion. You know what I mean? I saw that the brands I was buying was art. It was illustration on shirts. So I just like I saw it as one thing. You know what I mean? So it's a very organic transition. And the same thing you could say for murals. Because I was doing art, my friend had a shop in New York. Like, yo, like I should paint, like I'll paint your wall. I didn't see it as a big difference, but what happens is once you do these things, an industry becomes unveiled to you. You know what I mean?
Sure. And like you said, I'm always preaching this for many, many years on my podcast and just in real life that, fashion is the only art that you can wear on your body. Every time you get dressed, you're expressing something, whether you want to or not. Some people are like, I don't care about fashion, but they have to get dressed every day. So you're saying something every day. And also wanted to touch on the collector mindset, right? So if fashion is art and you're collecting, every time you buy a piece, you're collecting. And I don't think people kind of have separated that. They want something quick and something kind of knocked off right now. And they're not really collecting. And then, that's leading to, just disposing of it quicker and all of that kind of stuff. But like if you shop with meaning, like a collector mindset, the way you said, it's no difference from painting a mural. Clothing is all the same for you. So, a collector mindset, you would make like better choices, I think, too, as well. But yeah, like fashion and art is definitely all mixed together, all related. I'm from Chicago, too. I know about that pride from DC, having the rep and being proud of your
Okay,
city. And yeah, Chicago is very much like that. And I saw that you worked with Lupe
I know,
Fiasco.
I've been.
Yeah, tell me
Oh
about that.
Actually, so it's a project that never came out, right?
Okay.
I'll say this. To
Okay.
this day, it hasn't come out, right? To this day. But recently, let's just say it's very possible it will see the light of day, right? But it had been, this is a project I worked on a long time ago. I don't know when the last time I touched it, man. Maybe 2017.
Wow.
And so I did the mural. The mural kind of catches fire. It's in Manhattan. I didn't do it again with any type of intention. It's just like when I did the clothes, I was just doing what I know. And it's like, helping people out. You're like up against the wall, didn't have their brand anymore. People were looking for it. I'll design it. My friend had a shop. He needed promotion. I'll paint a mural,
Sure.
So a lot of people know this mural now. It's a Marge Simpson with flower hair that goes all the way up this wall, right? Like, how she has the tall hair? It's like my
Right.
flowers. And this is in West Village, and it's a very popular piece, right? But I didn't mean for this, I just did it. While I'm painting it, people were filming a movie eventually, so I'm in the background of some movie painting. So this just, right place, right time, and good intentions, I guess. And from there, because a mural is a billboard, it's an advertisement, you know what I mean? And
Yes.
once people see it, people will just hit you up. So one thing I tell people that want to get into murals, it's like you're getting paid to advertise your own work. It's like getting paid to have a billboard of your work. So, because once you do one, you're gonna get contacted, And then once you do two, three, four, five, now it multiplies how many people are seeing your work and contacting you. So, murals are kind of like a snowball effect. It happens really fast. So it took me to Miami, right? That's why I learned how I learned about Art Basel and Wynwood, which is, kind of like the mural capital of America. And
Yeah.
once I saw that, right, I was shocked. You know what I mean? Like I get to Wynwood and I'm kind of shocked. So I end up relocating, right? After doing a lot of illustration work in New York and all that, I relocated to Miami to become a muralist to get more into it. So I was in Miami painting a mural, a bunch of murals. And at the time, Lupe was doing a project on Twitter where he was using the limited characters to write a story, right? So like each cha like he was doing something like that. You know what I mean? Like
Sure.
he's a very intellectual person, and
Yeah.
he to me he gives off like that's how he entertains himself, by doing something crazy, challenging, creative, right? So it kind of inspired me, and he wrote this story on Twitter using the limited characters as like chapters or something like that, right? So I just thought it was an interesting story, so I just for practice, I just drew it. I drew it and I posted it on Twitter, and it went viral. Like he saw it, people were sharing it, and he hit me up. You know what I mean? And he's like, "Yo, let's do this. Let's do it." You know what I mean? So I was working on that for years. Like it's something where like his life was going on. He was doing albums, all type of stuff.
Sure.
My life was happening quick. You know what I mean? And we always touch back bases, and we stopped the project probably 2017, and then since then, he would invite me to here or there, probably see each other, complex con, stuff like that. And but now, like I'll just say, like there's a chance it'll be seen, you know what I mean?
Sure. Tell me about Miami, because I'm actually going to be in Miami next week. So if you have a mural there, like, is it in the
Okay.
design district? Is it in Wynwood? What does it look like? I'm sure I could probably Google it too, and we can connect offline. But that could I'm going to be working out of Wynwood for about a week next week. So interested to see
Okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah. So I have a hybrid storefront in Wynwood, right? That I have a mural on, right? So you'll definitely see that. It's right off the main street. My brand is sold in two stores in the heart of Wynwood, but one of them is almost like a flagship. right? It's a collaboration with the local franchise of both of those stores, right? But you'll see, it's like an installation of mine, a brand installation. And so there's a small mural in there, but there's also a big mural off of Biscayne, and I want to say 21st. I'll send it to you, but it was my largest mural. It was my largest mural for a long time. It's like 60 feet, something like that. It's pretty big.
Wow. I'm excited to see
60
that 'cause
feet tall. Something crazy like that.
No, I love that. I haven't officially, I think I've only been to Art Basel once early days, and it's become this huge thing now, kind of like, how Coachella became a huge thing. And yeah,
For
I'm
sure.
looking forward to being in the Design District next week. Diesel is very popular again. I wore it early aughts in Y2K when Y2K was happening, actually. Now Diesel, it's on fire, and I saw that you did some work with Diesel. I'd love to hear about that because things go in cycles. Everything comes back. Diesel was hot, then it was not. Now it's back. Talk to me about that.
I actually only know it's back because they're doing a lot in Miami, a lot. So you'll see it once you get there. Like, they're doing a lot. I think they just opened a spot in Design District, and they're opening like a Diesel condominium in Wynwood or something like that. But how did Diesel happen? You know what? While I was in New York, while I was doing the illustration work. So while I was in New York, I was actually working in illustration, storyboarding, right? Film development, storyboarding, right? And comics. So at the time, right? At the time, this is when a lot of movies were being made from comic books, Walking Dead, stuff like that, right? This is when that was having a boom, Walking Dead, Marvel. So what happened was a lot of Hollywood writers, instead of investing in a pilot, right, which is, takes a lot of money to, film a pilot, they would instead find an artist and do a graphic novel or a comic book to pitch their film, right? Because then they kill two birds with one stone. Now you can possibly put the book out, raise funds, develop a cult fan base while you also pitch to Hollywood. So what happened is all these Hollywood studios got deals with comic companies as a first look deal. So Fox, let's just say the company I was working with had a deal with Fox, right? So I was working for Hollywood writers pitching their ideas first as a comic, and then Fox will have the first opportunity to pick it up. So I was kind of caught up in that whole thing. I was in New York at the right time when these Hollywood guys were coming for that. And damn, wait, remind me the question.
So, how did Diesel happen for you? And because
Okay,
now
okay,
you were
okay.
telling me the process of how did you fall into Diesel?
Right. Okay. So what happened was, I'm telling you, like, have you ever seen the movie like Joe Dirt? Okay, that's how my life is when I tell this story, right? Like in like an art way, right? So it's like so many side stories that just happened, right? So that's why I'm like, wait, where are we going with this? Because there's so many levels to this, right? But this whole time, I'm not bookmarking this in my mind. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta understand, I'm just doing what's in front of me. You know what I mean? I don't know that it's gonna take me here. So I'm not remembering the last thing I did. I'm not thinking about the next thing. To me, it's not happening in like a very correct way. Now when I look back at it, I'm like, oh shit, it made sense. You know what I mean? But so what happens is I just needed money. Right? So I'm working on these illustration projects take a very long time, right? So end up connecting through a couple people to a friend of mine now named Maria, who ran a installation company for embroidery, right? They would do, so now it's popular, right? At this time, she pioneered it, right? But it's what do they call it? Active marketing. What is it called? I forget what it's called. Experiential marketing, right? That's what they call it. So you might go into a Gucci right now, and they may have an embroiderer there who can add your name to a garment, right?
Right. Like the monogramming on the spot and all of that. Yeah. It's normal now.
So my friend pioneered that. She pioneered that whole thing, right? She started it from, she was working for an embroidery company, and then she started pitching this to stores in New York, Macy's, things like this. So I met her, you know, through just mutual friends, not even off any work stuff. And she found out, you know, I can do this, and I'm an artist, and I'm a designer. Well, I don't know if I was a designer at that moment, but she found out I had experience, right? And I started doing these installs, right? So we're talking about Macy's. I did Ben Sherman. I did a bunch of different brands, right? Did I do Diesel early on? I did Adidas. I did a lot of these brands. But what I was doing was painting, right? Once I came into the fold, she started offering painting because that's what I could do a lot. So she offered everything I could do. So what happened, right? Take a journey with me, right? Imagine this. New York Fashion Week. I'm in New York. I live in New York. I'm working in illustration in my house, working long nights. Takes a long time. And you know, she asked me to do, you know, oh, can you do Adidas on this day? I don't even know it's New York Fashion Week. You know what I mean? So I go, they happen to have ASAP. They're doing an installation with ASAP, right? And they had ASAP first stylist, Kwasi, right? It's my guy, right? And he was styling people, right, at the Fifth Avenue or Seventh Avenue store in Manhattan. And they had me as the sneaker customizer. So what happens is, every time I do these things, they ask me to make a sample. So that people know what to, you know, what you can do. On the sample, I always did my flowers, just because that's what I felt like doing. What ended up happening is the reps from Adidas, Diesel, all these different brands would fight over that sample. Everybody wanted it. So what happened is now I'm getting booked, but they're asking me, hey, when you do your sample, can you do it a size 6? Because the person who brought me in wants this shoe. So what happens is, instead of people asking for their name, they start asking for my flowers, right? So yeah. Maria starts pitching me. Instead of she's pitching an embroiderer or a painter, she's just pitching Chris Pyre. Because now these people are like Ben Sherman. If you go far back on my Instagram, you'll see these things where I'm like holding Ben Sherman like dress shoes, but it's my flowers on the front. And so what happens is she connects me with Diesel to do an install. I don't even remember what the first one was, but eventually they do Hype Fest, which was, I think, before ComplexCon. It was Hypebeast tried to do a ComplexCon before ComplexCon.
Yeah.
And so this was a very pioneering thing, right? So Diesel brings me, because I had been, at this point, doing this Diesel campaign with Gucci Mane and Nicki Minaj, I want to say. Diesel did this thing where, like, Google it. You'll see this Gucci Mane commercial where he raps his verse and then it's written all over his clothes. Right?
Okay.
And so they brought me in to do my handwriting for the quote of Gucci Mane, right? So I did the Hype Fest, but at Hype Fest, I was one of like probably 4 different artists, right? After I do this, Diesel picks me up to be the handwriting guy for this campaign, and they start sending me to Miami, all over to different Diesel stores, and do an in-store where there's like a Velcro patch with my handwriting of Gucci Mane's quote or whatever celebrity at the moment. And you know, they started sending me jackets to my house to do the handwriting on, and then they would ship them to celebrities, right? So yeah, that's how I started with, again, at the moment, I'm not realizing, oh, I'm working with Diesel, you know what I mean? I'm just like, I needed this money, bet. What's the next one? What are you sending me? Cool, Gucci Mane? Cool, you know what I mean? But I'm not seeing the bigger picture. I'm just, you know, it's just happening all at once. So that's how it started, and then I became really cool with them, you know what I mean? And they started to hear my ideas out. I was ahead of my time with the vision, so I wasn't ready for a lot of it, but they heard everything out. They would take meetings with me. It was a really cool company, man. It really is.
Talk to me about the business of it, because when you say like a lot of artists like yourself, they're trying to make a living out of it. They need to make money. They need to survive. They need to, this is what they want to do full time. They don't want to like gig and do their art. So, tell me about the part that you like and the part that you don't like. And there'll be artists listening to this. Anything you could tell them about the business part? Because I think a lot of artists struggle with that part about consistent income and just how to, be a sole proprietor, how to be a freelancer, how to make sure you get paid. They're worried about exploitation. I'm just curious of how like you make sure that you're taken care of and things are working out for you and they're working out for Chris Pirate and not just, Diesel or, whoever.
I mean, at the time, I didn't know any of that, right? You know what I mean? At the time, like, yo, whatever you paying me, I'm taking it. You know what I
Got
mean?
it.
Like, this stuff is easy to me. You got to let me do the flowers? Bet. That's easy. You know what I mean? I do that in my sleep. You know what I mean? It was like just fun for me to do. You know what I mean? So at the time, I probably was getting exploited, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like early on. But you know, as an artist, you love what you do. And it just feels a lot better than working a 9 to 5, right? So whatever is going to allow me to just keep doing this. So I think that's the problem where a lot of artists, we kind of like almost too grateful, you know what I mean, to make money off of it. Too grateful that some you know, early on you might even be grateful just to do it for free. Oh, somebody's giving me a wall to paint a mural. I'm so grateful, you know, not knowing, you know, how it's affecting their business. But at the same time, sometimes that doesn't really matter because you're not really. So, I'll say this: being an artist is just a certain type of person, just a certain type of thinking process, right? I try to tell people because people ask the question, "How can I be an artist?" If you ask me the question, you already are an artist. You already obviously think about it enough that you want to achieve it, so you already probably think like an artist. Artist is just a type of thinking. So the difference is. The real question is how do I become a professional artist? That's the distinction, right? But I think you got to make that distinction first. Or a lot of people they think that if they're not making money, it's not valid. Or they think that, you know what I mean? And so they put the cart before the horse. First, you have to be an artist. And you got to be okay with that. You know what I mean? And sometimes that does mean just getting the art out there. You know? Sometimes that comes with painting a mural for free because why would somebody pay you? They've never seen you paint one. You know what I mean? Sometimes it comes with that, right? But if you think that artist means, oh, I'm cause or this and I'm this person making money, then you probably will never do that groundwork to get your portfolio up. You know what I mean? You probably won't express yourself enough where somebody can figure out what they want to pay you for. You know? A lot of these things I just did, yeah, I was getting money for some of it, but it wasn't like great money, you know. I didn't have a long-term deal with Diesel. Nowadays I would, you know what I mean? Like, I was a ghost designer on a lot of projects and brands. Just, I can't even remember them all. Diesel, Adidas, I've done Nike stuff back then, all types of stuff. There are brands I work with now that don't even know I did that back then. You know what I mean? And so I think it's important to get your stuff in front of people. Whether they like it or not, it doesn't matter. You have to do that so you feel comfortable with your work and you feel comfortable. You know what I mean? It's like it's that thing of if a tree falls in the forest with nobody around, did it ever fall? You know what I mean? Nobody heard it, right? Nobody witnessed it. So art is a two-way conversation. It's not art until someone sees it. You know what I mean?
Got it. You
It
have to
really
get
isn't,
the
you
proof
know?
of concept. You got to have a proof of concept first, and then you could pursue deals.
Yeah, and the deals don't validate you as an artist. If you think that, then you'll never do the proof of concept. You know what I mean? You'll look for the deal. And you validate yourself as an artist just by putting it out. You know, that's first step. You got to do that. And you know, like I said, like you look at My life, when I try to tell people about this stuff, it sounds like a Joe Dirt or a Forrest Gump, like this long story of like, yo, you end up here on accident. Isn't that, that's probably how it is. You know what I mean? Like, because you may be just drawing pictures, and then why wouldn't you put that on a big wall when you get the opportunity to? It's the same thing. It's just on a bigger scale. So even though the industry of a mural is different than an illustrator or a painter, it's not. It's the same thing. You're just doing it on different things. Even designing graphic t-shirts is the same thing as drawing a shirt or painting a mural. You know what I mean? It's just on a different medium. So, yeah, you got to separate artists from professional artists. You know what I mean? And you got to be one before the other. That's first. And you got to be okay with just putting your ideas out there. If I was so hell-bent on becoming this big fashion designer, I probably wouldn't have done all the random stuff that had me be really figuring out what I do best. You know what I mean? In the moment, I want to paint a mural, so I just do it. I'm not masterminding, yo, I want to paint the perfect mural in the perfect city in the perfect this.
Yeah, it's going
to lead artist
to that, yeah.
Right, because if you do that, you'll hesitate. If you do that, you'll wait for the most ideal situation, and you might miss the opportunity, you know, like, because I did so many installations, I end up getting stuck in Toronto for Christmas because I was doing an installation for Canada Goose or somebody like that, Woolrich or something, and I had never even been to Toronto, you know what I mean? And now, you'll see later this year, I'll be working with the Toronto Raptors now. You know what I mean? Things like this, you just have to, you got to go on a journey. You get an idea, put it out there immediately. Because to you, it's your best idea. It's not. You know what I mean? Like, once you get the experience of doing that and whatever that leads you to, you'll get better ideas. You can't get hung up off the, yo, I have this one get-rich scheme. No, you got to put this stuff out there. You know, look at all the artists. They have many journeys and many evolutions of their work, from musicians that are now fashion designers and things. What if they held on to that music till it was perfect? They would never accidentally now be head of Louis Vuitton. You know what I mean? Like, look at Pharrell. Like, if he was just trying to hold on to the perfect song forever, he had to just put music out there and it led it to something else. You know what I mean? At the moment, it'll feel like your best idea. Put it out there. You'll get better ideas. Let it go. Grow and teach you. Let it exist. Let it grow. It's like a kid. Put your art out there. No sacred ideas. No sacred cows. That's art, you know?
Got it. Okay, so bringing your experiences, all of them, up into the forefront, you know, tell me about your brand. Is a three-part question. Tell me about your brand and the significance of just the flower and that leading up to Washington Wizards, because I know you just mentioned Toronto Raptors too, so now you're on this like NBA thing, but tell me about what's happening.
Yeah, you're the first person first place I'm saying that at. But
okay. All right, you heard it here first. He's gonna be working with the Toronto Raptors. That's so dope. But yeah, I'd love to, now you're on business. So I'd love to hear about that.
first part of the question was, I remember the Wizards part. What was the first part?
The significance of the flower and like your brand, the Chris Pirate brand.
Okay. Yeah. So at one point when I was always designing, I've always designed because it was the first thing I was ever able to do professionally. And I just, once I was skating and seeing the culture line up, like, I had never really, coming from D.C., we're big in the shoes. You know, look at the Wale's and people like that. You know, we were on New Balances when that was crazy to wear it anywhere else. They thought that was old white man shoes. You know what I mean? The New Balance was our Air Force, right? You know what I mean? New Balance, Foam Posite. DC always has had a very unique style perspective and point of view where we don't really look to New York. We don't look to these other cities. So that's just a natural part of being from DC, right? When you're from DC, you're stylish. You may not know it because you didn't go anywhere else. is normal where we're from. But you go somewhere else, it has a very unique style, right? So I've always been into shoes and stuff like that because that's just DC culture. The rest of it, I hadn't really cared about the shirt or the, you know what I mean, the pants that much. And what happened was, in high school, I got kicked out. I had to live with my dad in Los Angeles. And because of LA politics, Crips, Bloods, all this stuff, I was living in Carson. That's a Crip neighborhood, but my dad's girlfriend was in Inglewood, so I would be in a Blood neighborhood. So I was shocked, man. So I couldn't wear my old clothes, right?
Right.
Everything I brought, I couldn't wear. So what I learned was, yo, like, just be neutral out here. Just, you know what I mean? Start over. Start fresh. So they had to take me school shopping and get me all new stuff. So I end up going to the swap meet in LA. I don't know if it was real or not, but I got a bunch of Von Dutch, right? A bunch of Von Dutch. This is high school. I had never seen this stuff.
My gosh,
But to
that's
me,
that too.
you know, so you're right, it is. Damn, that's crazy. So actually my partner in the Miami store, he's one of the original Von Dutch people. And I just told him this. He didn't even know this until maybe like 3 weeks ago. I told him like, Von Dutch is what made me see art as clothing. Because they had these big embroidery of flaming eyeballs and all this crazy stuff all over the pants. And like I said, where I'm from, sneaker culture is on point, pinnacle. So, but it was just sneaker culture. Now you go to LA where they don't really wear sneakers. They wear Chuck Taylors, you know? They neutral. Chuck Taylors, basketball shorts. But you go to swap meet, because of Hollywood, now you have Von Dutch. You have all this very experimental clothes. So I brought all that back to DC. So now I'm putting the shoe with these wild pants, with these surfer shirts, and all this stuff. And they used to call me Cali when I came back. And I just really got into like, yo, there's something like about this. You know what I mean? When I put all this on, it's not all from the same place. The shoes are from DC. The shirts are from probably like Laguna Beach or something like that. The pants and the clothes are Von Dutch Hollywood stuff. And I didn't know where all this stuff come from, but I put it together. You know what I mean? In high school. And it just became early a way of me understanding like, yo, I got something to say with this. You know what I mean? Like, I like this. I like communicating whatever I'm communicating, you know? And so I've always designed. It doesn't matter if I was painting murals, it doesn't matter if I was working in illustration. I always had like a little side project. And it was called A Human Fly. That's what my original brand was. It was called A Human Fly. I didn't want it to be associated with me as a painter. I was overthinking it. Kind of how I was telling you, artists shouldn't overthink. While I'm trying to mastermind this streetwear brand, right? Like, because I had been in the game, I'm like, yo, it's best for nobody to know who designs it. It's best if it just stands on its own. Now my name's blowing up working with these brands. And it's blowing up with the flowers. It's blowing up with my illustration style. I'm trying not to have those touch, you know what I mean? And eventually someone told me, friends of mine are like, yo, bro, I started putting the flowers in the human fly, and they're like, yo, just drop that name, call it Chris Pirate, bro. You're making life harder for yourself, you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that, I don't want to do it. And so I just started making merch for the murals. I would let that stuff be called Chris Pirate. And that's how the brand kind of started, right? Is that I took this high design stuff I was trying to do, and I just allowed my art to affect that and allowed to merge it. And that's why if you look at the clothes, yeah, it could have easily just been artist merch, right? And
Sure.
that's what I didn't want. That's why I separated them. So I made an extreme effort for the clothes to never feel like merch. That's why, like, it's always and it's always a customizable or utilitarian aspect to it where, oh yeah, the jacket, this yellow jacket behind me has the flower lining on the inside, but it's also reversible, right? And these denims, you know, are pretty simple, but if you cuff them, there's a flower pattern in the cuff. You know what I mean? I try to do things to where, like, people, this is more than artist merch. This is art that you're wearing. You yourself can express something that hopefully your closet wasn't allowed to express before you got this piece. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
that's how the flowers became part of the brand, and that's how the brand married. But the flowers themselves came from me being far away from home on this art journey. And while I was working on the Lupe project, I lost a few people. I was working on the Lupe project. A lot was going on. I was traveling. And I lost people back home that I felt kind of guilty that I hadn't been home. I never got to see these people again. You know, I never got to speak to these people again. And a lot of people don't know DC is DC can be a very dangerous city. When I grew up, DC was savage. You know, it was, when I was a little kid, it was the murder capital. So
I know a little bit about that. Yeah.
I was on this.
Chicago.
Yeah. You know? I mean, you're from Chicago, so you know. Yeah, exactly. So I was on this journey and I was learning so much because I was learning that the world's so much bigger than where I'm from. So, and that's why I tell you, like, a lot of it, I was just grateful. I was grateful to not be stuck in my neighborhood. I was grateful to be making art. I was grateful to be doing this. And I got so distant from home, getting as high of this journey, that I wasn't keeping connection like I should have. And I lost a few people. And I had a severe artist block. And at the time, I was working on a Lupe project. He doesn't even know this, right? I was working on a Lupe project. And I felt like, this is Lupe Fiasco. I grew up on his music. I have to figure this out. I can't tell anybody, like, oh, I lost people, so I'm not going to be able to work. No, I got to figure this out. I got to work. And I tried to force my way through it, and it just didn't work. And I started having just, you know, a lot of reflection. And nowadays, I know that that's called survivor's guilt. But at the time, I didn't know that. And basically, I just stopped making art. I stopped doing anything. I didn't talk to anybody for like 2 weeks. And the first thing that came out of me was this piece of a red ape on a dragon with a sword, with flowers coming out of the sword. I don't know. I had never made anything abstract in my life. You know what I mean? Lupe says, yo, this guy walks into a bar. That's what I draw. You know what I mean? I had never made something that I didn't understand. You know, and for the first time I made something that even to this day, I don't know exactly what it meant. I learn more about it every year. Every time people observe it and they tell me what it means to them, I learn more about it. But I was told at the time, stop everything you're doing. This is $1 million piece of art, right? My landlord happened to be an artist and art appraiser. He's like, this is $1 million piece of art. I'm like, bro, I don't know how to make $1 million off of this art. So, right, I can't stop everything I'm doing. And basically, I had a short circuit. I did this piece, and I found a way back home. I knew I had to go back to D.C. to just kind of, you know what I mean, make things right for myself. And what I realized on this journey back home, I did a bunch of murals. That's when I did the Marge Simpson mural. I did a bunch of murals and things like that to fundraise me going back home. I did art shows in North Carolina, installations in New York, all these things. I basically made a tour to get me back home. And
okay,
on this tour, I realized what the flowers meant. And I realized through this one piece I did of like this astronaut, he's falling into the flowers. You can find it on my Instagram. But he's reaching out, and it's this one flower he's reaching out for, and it's a cherry blossom. And I don't know why I did it. It just was fire. Right? And I kept looking at the piece. Like, I was at my gallery show in North Carolina, and I'm like, yo, what does this mean? Why is he reaching for the one flower, but he's falling into a bunch of flowers. So I called the piece Missing Home from Paradise. What a fool. Because I thought it was crazy. Like, yo, this guy's falling into these flowers, but he's still chasing one. And I realized that that one flower was the cherry blossom out of all things, which represents D.C. If people don't know, that's a big thing in D.C. And I realized that I was just missing home. And I was missing home from Miami. I'm like, yo, you missing home from paradise. What a fool. That's crazy. And and this piece, you know, this piece ended up selling for a good amount of money and helping me. It's actually on my neck. If you, I don't know if you can see it. The astronaut reaching for the flower up here.
Wow.
Huh? Yeah, I'll okay. You said it'll be clear, right? Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the piece sold. I never wanted to sell it because it meant a lot. So I got it on me. But yeah, I realized that the flowers represented, the cherry blossom specifically represented home. I feel like the other colors kind of represent the other parts of the journey. That's why you get a little pastel tropical. It's like a Miami almost, you know what I mean? But yeah, the flowers were just, it was an accident, and it comes from loss. It comes from survivor's guilt, and it comes from realizing that, like, no matter where I'm at, I always got to connect back with home, because I could be on top of the world, and if I'm not connected back to home, I can kind of lose it all just because I lose my foundation.
Thank you for sharing that. That's super thoughtful and touching. And I knew that the repetition of it meant something. And repetition is so important in art, because it's like your little signature. I want to hear about what's happening with you, this vision, wizards to raptors. What's going on with you, the current vision?
Okay. Yeah, I forgot that was the second part of the question, right? That first part is just is heavy. That first part
is heavy. It is, and I didn't know that.
I'm be honest with you. I didn't tell that story. If you would have asked me a few years ago, I would have just told you a very surface part of it. I wouldn't have lied to you, but I wouldn't have told you the truth either. You know what I mean? And as DC goes through something that reminds me of when I was a kid, DC's kind of going through it again. It's kind of getting, it's a weird times. I realize that the story is important. You know what I mean? I've been told by people, you know what I mean? Like, yo, like, you got to tell that story. It can help. You know what I mean? And I want to be, that's why I tell people, yo, I was kicked out of school. I'm not supposed to be this guy. You know what I mean? Like when I was growing up, where I was growing up, I was told, you don't really make it to 25. You know what I mean? And because of that, I didn't properly plan for college or any of that. You keep hearing these things, you believe it, you know? And so I got to tell people, and you'll see. You'll see the current expression of the brand will be, it's a tagline. And it says, these flowers were grown from concrete. And that's kind of, you'll see that echoed through. I'm about to do a tour this year, and I'm about to, the NBA is part of that tour. And it's just to connect with different cities and show, like, yeah, these flowers, they kind of like went a long way. They've gone, they've come a long way, been in high fashion situations, been on walls, all types of things, but they come from the street. You know what I mean? Come from a very real story, a very, you know what I mean? And I don't think people knew that. So that's the vision right now. The vision is I'll have a lot of projects that echo that. You know what I mean? And I kind of want to be able to tell the same story that I've been able to tell with the Wizards. You know, because basketball is a very concrete thing. It's something that when you don't have a lot, you know, you still got the court in your neighborhood. And you still got, you know, it brings a lot of people together, you know what I mean, who don't have a lot, you know? And so one thing that people don't know about me is that I actually went to a basketball school. I was kicked out of a basketball school. I went to school with Patrick Ewing Jr., with Kevin Durant, with Michael Beasley. That's another big thing in DC. You know, DC and DMV is a big basketball town. A lot of athletes come out of there. Basketball and football. Kevin Durant was one of my best friends in high school. And it's kind of crazy. I went to this school. It's a private school. I went to this school because my family has good ties with the school because my cousin is an athlete, and he's the first athlete to be get scouted from the by the NBA at this school. So he kind of created the basketball program. So he's a mentor to KD and all these people. I remember he called me in a room one day, and he's like, "Yo, talk to my boy." I get on the phone. I was like, "I don't know who is it." He's like, "His name's Carmelo Anthony. Introduce yourself." You know what I mean? So I introduce myself and I get back off the phone. I don't know who this guy is. Next thing you know, he's Carmelo Anthony, right? So I grew up with basketball around me. You know, I grew up with basketball around me. I shouldn't have been in this school because we couldn't afford the school, and which is why I got in a lot of trouble there. You know what I mean? I was going back to the hood. We were moving around a lot. So it's kind of full circle that now I'm so basketball intertwined as an artist. This is not anything I planned. It kind of happened from when I moved back. I moved back and I took the blueprint. There's an artist named Atomic in Miami, and he does a big orange, right? And it's all over the city. You'll see it. You'll see it in a couple weeks. It's everywhere, right? And so I got inspired by that because Miami embraces graffiti in a way that I've never seen. Like this guy illegally paints this everywhere, and it's allowed and it's appreciated. And when a store is opening up, when a new store is opening up, they try to get him to do something because it validates him. So when I moved back home, I was kind of spoiled because I had been in very art facing cities, Brooklyn, Miami, and I didn't want to lose that. I knew I had to go back home to kind of make things right with family and friends and myself. But I didn't want to go back to the city I left because there was no room for black artists when I was a kid. I was never taught, like, I was taught in my house, but that I'm an artist, but outward I had, it meant nothing. So I was a little worried about that. And so kind of when I came home, all my friends told me, "Yo, when you move back home, you will become the king of the city, bro. Like, it's gonna turn up, da da da." I'm like, "I don't see it." You know what I mean? I feel like I'm gonna have to get a regular job, all this. And basically, long story short, I took the inspiration of Atomic and these Miami stars who are just graffiti artists who get their work as much up as much as possible, and now there's so much stars that they're in the new Grand Theft Auto that's in Miami. They put their same murals in the work, right? So that's how the city embraces art. And because that's what I knew when I came back home, I also know a lot of people in DC. I've been a musician. I was a big musician in art school. I know all the artists. So now the DJs on the radio, the MCs, the hosts, I know all these people. I was one of the first young skaters, and also I know everybody who's kind of somebody in DC now. So when I moved back, I'm just like, "Yo, I want to paint these murals." So I knew all the right people, so I started like offering it, and I started getting pieces up on some very like marquee spots in the city. Shout out to the museum. And one thing led to another, and the Wizards, I did a piece kind of referencing the Wizards. It's like when you come, as soon as you come into DC, I did a big piece that says Washington. And I used the old Wizards W. And then everybody tagged the Wizards on this thing. Everybody's like, "Yo, you got to do a Chris Pirate jersey. You got to do this." Because one thing I appreciate about my city, while I was on the journey, people watched it. I made DC proud. I wasn't really paying attention like that, but people were watching this journey. So when I came back home, it was kind of celebrated. And so people would back this stuff. So they at the Wizards reach out. Lo and behold, they have a cherry blossom jersey that they're working on. I had no clue. This is just good, perfect timing, right? You know what I mean? You got to listen to, sometimes you got to listen to I don't know, you gonna call it the universe, you know,
Right.
God, your heart, whatever you want to call it, man. Sometimes, like, it's sometimes it tells you to do something that seems like it's going to interrupt everything that you've built, everything, all your comfort zones. You know, I was living in Miami doing art in a place that appreciated art. DC is a very historic place. There wasn't a lot of creative murals. There was historic murals, but not creative murals. I didn't see it as any type of like art win of me moving back. I saw it as a personal win. But when I moved back, the Wizards happened to be working on Cherry Blossom Jersey. They brought me in. I consulted on it. And being from the city, we tell the truth. I'm like, yo, I don't know about this. They appreciated that honesty. And I'm like, yo, like, where's a wizard? I don't see a wizard on it on anything. Like, if I'm gonna do something, I need to make a wizard. So I made a black wizard, right? And
Right.
I'm like, yo, I didn't even show him until it was about to come out, 'cause I'm like, yo, I don't want them to get hung up on the fact that it's black or something like this. I don't know why they haven't done this before, but like, yo, I know if I put this out, the city's gonna rock with it crazy. And what happened was, I was a part of the second highest sales day that the Wizards have ever had. I was the first time there was a line outside the store for the Wizards. So, ever since then, we just had a great relationship. And it's the weekend, right? This is Sunday. The Wizards called me, or we were on the phone yesterday. And they don't work on Saturdays, you know what I mean? So the CMOs, the homie, and I bring all my nephews to games. We get floor seats. Like, it just became a. I'm a very organic type of person, man. I can't really do it no other way. So I'm very honest. I'm very like, yo, this is what needs to happen. Trust me. And you know, when it works, you know. And so, it's just been a good symbiotic relationship from that. The NBA caught wind. The NBA took meetings with me separately about what I did with the Wizards, you know, wonder why, what was going on, and now I've been approached on a larger scale. I did NBA Con with the NBA last year, and now I've been approached with the opportunity to go larger than just the Wizards. But look, it's always the home team; they're gonna get the special stuff. But you know, yeah, it's just one.
Of
It's
course.
just being yourself, you know, being yourself, right? And like, also, not just trying to be a yes man, you know? Also, saying the things that, like, yo, you might think that, like, yo, there's a reason why something exists. It's already been talked about. It's already been strategy. You might, nah, sometimes it just hasn't been said, or the right person hasn't said it. You know, I thought that, like, yo, why is there no wizard? There must be some type of thing about it. There must be something. So I went in there like, yo, I don't know why you guys don't do a wizard, but I gotta do a wizard. And they're
Right.
like, yo, that's a great idea. You know what I mean? That's simple. And now in like maybe like in March, I'll be painting my wizard character for the Wizards on a giant 30-foot mural, you know, in the middle of the city. So you guys are about to see a lot of that. You know, a lot of what I'm doing with the Wizards. And then, like I said, all things work, you know, work how they're supposed to go. You'll see a lot more other NBA things on this next journey.
What is your favorite thing to do before we close out? And you're going to tell people how to find you and how to stay connected to you. Murals, fashion design, music, comics, any of it. What is the top thing?
It's always what it changes, right? At the moment, it's fashion. At the
Okay.
moment, it's fashion for sure. But I've, like I said, I've always done all of it. You know, even when one wasn't working, when I was doing murals early on, or illustration, storyboarding, comics, I still was doing clothes as another brand. I always do it all. And why? I think, I forget who I was talking to, an artist the other day, but they said the same thing. Like, basically, it's very hard to just do one thing as an artist, because it'll start to feel like work, right? So it's like you gotta cheat on the thing that's paying you. You know what I mean? It makes it fun again, right? So
Yes.
if murals are paying, if murals are paying me now it's not an instinctual thing anymore. At one point, I was just painting whatever I wanted, right? So now it doesn't feel the same. Now it feels like work. So while I'm doing that, I'm going to cheat on that. I'm going to start sneaking and really spending time designing clothes because there's no protocol. There's no expectations, right? And that'll become like the escape almost. You know what I mean? And then that ends up working. And now I'm probably painting murals again because there's less pressure, less expectations over there while the clothes come out. And so, honestly, it's a healthy shuffle as an artist, right? To keep things going because you need something to not feel like work, right? Or you'll lose what you lose why you did it in the first place. You know what I mean? Right now it's fashion, but like I said, I haven't done murals in a while on a big scale. So I'm about to do a couple big murals for a couple big teams, NFL and NBA. So I think I'm going to fall back in love with that for a little while. You know what I mean? The thing about clothes is you can't stop. You got to design that while it's hitting you. You got to stockpile that for future seasons and stuff like that. So yeah, just a good rotation. Keep it fun. Keep it diverse because that's what keeps it fun. You know what I mean? And so right now, fashion. But if you ask me in a few months when I put that big wizard in the town, yeah, it'll probably be that.
Cool. I appreciate your story and your process so much. And also, I always say that success for most people truly is a zig and a zag. It's not a straight line. And you've just proven that, you know, again and again. I think people think success is just this one kind of way. You got to take a pause, like you said, with the flowers, missing home, mourning, whatever that may be, like listening to yourself, listening to your consciousness, knowing when it's time to pause, you know, and take care of yourself as well. But yeah, thank you so much for being on You Have to Wear Something. And let us know how to keep in touch with you. Do you prefer, everyone has a favorite. Do you prefer Twitter, Instagram, TikTok? You have a newsletter. What's going on?
I do have a newsletter. If you go to the website, you can subscribe to that. But Instagram is, I'm a simple man. I can't do a million things at once. but Instagram and Threads, I'm starting to like Threads, you know what I mean? I got some late night thoughts I just throw out there, you know what I mean? You might catch a few strays, but I'll leave you with this too. One thing I didn't say particularly is like, yo, sometimes that voice, you know what I mean? It tells you to do something that's extremely out your comfort zone. You know what I mean? And at the time, you may not see the vision. You may not see the vision, but yo, on the other side of fear is always like the best growth. You know what I mean? So you just gotta like, you gotta put on your big boy pants and you gotta do what you gotta do. You know what I mean? And you can't micromanage your journey. You know what I mean? You don't know what's coming. Don't overthink it. Do what feels right. If you know what I mean, do what you gotta do to stay in touch with what feels right so that you can trust it. You know what I mean? And sorry, you got to do it. You know what I mean? You just got to do it.
Take that leap. Thank you so much. This is Chris Pirate, y'all. Dropping nuggets. His last name, you spell it P-Y-R-A-T-E if you're looking for him. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday and all the best to you. We'll stay tuned to those future murals.
No doubt. And I want to say I like the name of your podcast.
Thank you, because you do have to wear something or you will go to jail.
Nah, facts. It's facts.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.